Hello, this is Wendy Bauer. Today is September 28th, 2015, and I will be reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll begin today's reading on the local page. An article titled Festival Moves to Fall focuses on cleanup cause. From Decatur. Neighborhood groups and churches took advantage of a gorgeous, breezy, early fall day to promote their causes and encourage young people to clean up the city. Sandy Cole, a member of Beautify Decatur, a branch of Grow Decatur, was signing up youngsters to spruce up their surroundings. She and her cohort, Millikan University freshman Bree Bagley, handed out tickets for free concession food in exchange for their pledges to spend October picking up trash on their blocks. The team that wins for the most clean block will win bicycles and Walmart gift cards, Bagley said. At the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations Street Festival, held in Central Park on Saturday, Sue Lawson, the group's president, said the object of the project is to get young people to teach the adults to keep their blocks clean. Each team of two youngsters will be asked to patrol one block, both sides of the street, from the front of the buildings to the curb. Judges will inspect the blocks on the program list 7 times during the month. The team that does the best job will be awarded the prizes at a gathering at the end of the month in Torrance Park. Lawson said the Saturday festival was moved this year from its customary spring date to the fall because there have been weather issues in the past. The first street festival in 2009 was postponed because of rain. She was pleased with the turnout Saturday, especially considering that there were many other events scheduled the same day. Lawson said she was especially glad to see several new groups participating this year, including churches. We want to get more churches involved in the neighborhoods, Lawson said. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe and City Council members Pat McDaniel and Jerry Dawson were on hand. Representatives from Richland Community College were also in attendance. St. Peter AME Church's Golden Age Ministry had a table filled with crafts such as miniature birdhouses, as well as plaques and keychains featuring inspirational sayings. James Collier said the ministry, open to seniors 55 and older, supports shut-ins at the Veterans Hospital in Danville, local nursing homes, and Dove, Inc., domestic violence shelter. We're a very active group, Collier said. We enjoy being together on Mondays. Francie Johnson, a Kono board member, said the street festival owed its origin to a conference that was held several years ago. Every year, we go to a regional conference in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee, or Kentucky, Johnson said. We were at a conference in Indiana. They had a street festival. We thought we could do that here. It just gets everybody in the city familiar with neighborhoods and that there are neighborhood organizations. And an article from Tony Reed, staff writer for the Herald and Review. CrossFit takes athletes to dark place. From Decatur, Allison Phelps went to a dark place Sunday during the D-Town Throwdown CrossFit Games, and then she kept going. Slumped on the ground, trying to catch her breath after completing a team that followed a workout of sit-ups and then lifting reps with 155-pound weights, she admitted to being a little pooped. My legs aren't working, she said with a laugh, but I love CrossFit training. It's an addiction. To do well, you have to go to a dark place inside yourself and hopefully come back. Phelps, 27, competing as part of a three-woman, three-man team from the Carriage House CrossFit Gym in Jacksonville, was among some 260 athletes pushing themselves to their limits and a bit beyond at the D-Town Throwdown. Now in its third year and hosted by Decatur Memorial Hospital's CrossFit Enhanced Gym, it attracted 45 teams from all over the state for 2 days of punishing and highly competitive exercise using just about every muscle in the body. Phelps' team was called the Young and the Elderly because the age range of team members went from 24 to 49. One of her teammates, Jolene Campbell, 39, said CrossFit is great for anyone of any age. I love to see what my body can do, she said, and that's why we are here today. Teams won medals, prizes and coveted 6-foot by 3-foot banners to go up in their home gyms. Watching the teams go head-to-head as 600 spectators cheered and dance music pulsed at ear-bleed levels, CrossFit Enhanced gym manager Josh Newton said you can take CrossFit as far as you want. The people out here today are really pushing it, added Newton, 30, but it works for a regular person who is just looking to be able to stand up from the couch easier, walk easier, and be a fitter human being. You might do one workout a day to stay fit, and that's it. You might get hungry for more, however, and Newton says CrossFit teaches you can never have enough of a good thing. But after 2 days of having that mega decibel dance music do a workout on his eardrums, he was ready for a rest late Sunday afternoon. It's mind-numbing after 2 days of it, he said. I'm exhausted, you know? And from Warrensburg, article by Ryan Voiles, Herald and Review staff writer, Warrensburg continues Honor Society. After some reconsideration, the Warrensburg-Latham School District will renew its affiliation with the National Honor Society. However, it will continue to operate its own Honor Society for junior high and younger students. The school board approved a plan that would allow students to be part of the National Honor Society as long as it is paid for through donations. The board had initially voted this spring to remove the district from the national group after membership in the society and its junior equivalent went from $75 a year to $385 a year. With the funds for the society coming out of the school's building fund, which is already strapped for cash, officials said they needed to look at programs for students that did not raise questions of stability. But parents of students in the society spoke up after the decision. After some discussion, points were made about how membership could look on a transcript and help students when applying for college, Superintendent Kristen Kendrick-Weichel said. The school has been promised enough donations that would allow it to fund the program for the next 4 years, barring another fee increase, high school principal Ken Hatcher said. The National Honor Society recognizes students who have demonstrated excellence in the areas of scholarship, leadership, service, and character. Students in the group are also eligible for scholarships, though no students from the district or neighboring ones have received one from the organization in recent years. Part of that reason is some of the stipulations the National Honor Society requires for students to receive scholarship, such as a teacher rating scale factor that can hurt students who may be less active in the classroom. To replace its membership in the society, officials had created a Warrensburg-Latham Honor Society, which would be based solely on the student's GPA and the amount of volunteer work done in the community. The Warrensburg-Latham Honor Society will continue in some form, as the board decided not to renew its membership with the National Junior Honor Society for 6th through 8th grade students. Kendrick-Weichel said officials heard from few parents about the Junior Society and had not been guaranteed the donations to keep the program funded. Board President David Munson said it could be a good starting point to see just how the Warrensburg-Latham Honor Society operates and whether it should be implemented in the high school level if there are future funding concerns about the Honor Society. And an article from Charleston by Dave Fope of the Lee News Service. Zombies scare up aid for Kids Center. Eric Eckberg said he and some of his fellow Eastern Illinois students were happy to be covered in blood and try to catch kids who ran to get away from them. They were zombies for a good cause. Eckberg and some other members of the Phi Kappa Theta fraternity were among the more than 100 Eastern students who volunteered Saturday during the Zombie Obstacle Course Challenge. Eastern's Student Community Services Office organized the event at the Coles County Fairgrounds as a fundraiser for the local Children's Advocacy Center. Eckberg said the students welcomed the chance to help the center, which helps law enforcement interview children and investigate abuse cases. Those kids have been going through a lot, he said. We thought we'd take the opportunity to help out. The admission fee allowed children and their families to try to get through a variety of obstacles, such as tossing balls into buckets and crawling through a straw bale maze while blindfolded. The last obstacle was a search in a wading pool full of plastic balls to find the key to Zombieland, where the college student zombies were waiting to give chase. For those wanting something scarier, there was also a dark maze in one of the fairgrounds buildings, where the idea was to get through without any lighting to help. Anne Pierce, a member of the group that helped organize the event, said she came up with the idea for the zombie theme because of the popularity of TV shows such as The Walking Dead. She's also a retired Illinois Department of Children and Family Services investigator, and said the iffy status of state funding meant an organization such as the Children's Advocacy Center could use help. "There's a great need for a safe place for children to be interviewed," Pierce said. Robin Carr, a family advocate with the center, attended the event and said the proceeds will help with the organization's general operating expenses. "We're always excited when the community wants to help the center," she said. Rachel Fisher, the EIU Student Community Service Office director, said about 20 people from the community helped organize the activities, and there are plans to make it an annual event. And out of Shelbyville, an article by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review, Shelby County Drug Court sees benefits. Court officials in the Shelby County say a rehabilitation program designed to help drug offenders avoid prison has had positive results, not just by reducing prison costs, but also for the offenders themselves. The county is participating in the state's Drug Court, a program funded through court fines that allows those facing sentences to the Illinois Department of Corrections for nonviolent drug crimes to avoid prison by completing a program of treatment, testing, counseling, and aftercare. Shelby County State's Attorney Gina Vonderheide said the program isn't offered to all drug offenders, but participants are selected by a county drug court board that includes judicial, mental health, probation, and legal representatives. "These are people looking at serious prison time," she said. "It's not a slap on the wrist for first offenders. We look at the person's situation and potential. Do they have the potential to be working, tax-paying citizens supporting their families? Do they have a support system in place that will keep them from falling into their previous lifestyle?" Participants complete a four-phase program, including mental health treatment, 12-step programs, multiple weekly drug tests, and individual assignments. By completing steps, offenders can move to an aftercare program that includes standard probation department requirements. "If it goes perfectly, the program takes up to 2 years to complete," Vonderheide said. "If the participant doesn't do the work, they go to prison. It's pretty simple." Since Shelby County joined the Illinois Drug Court program in 2012, fewer than a dozen people have been accepted. Vonderheide said the first two graduates were facing 30 to 40 years in prison for methamphetamine production when they were offered the drug court alternative. "They've been able to put their families back together and are tax-paying citizens with jobs," she said. "We're looking for people who have the most to lose by going to prison and the most to gain by participating in the program," probation officer Heather Wooters said. "If we continue to do things the way we have for the last 30 years, we will continue to get the same outcomes. But if we do things differently, we can get a different outcome. This is a good tool to do that." And in an article from Dahlville entitled "Pena Area Church to Mark 150th Anniversary." "Ich habe vertrauen in das Deutsche Kirche auf dem Hügel in Dahlville." That translates as, "I have faith in the German church on the hill in Dahlville," and pretty much sums up the attitude of a congregation that will celebrate its 150th anniversary, Saturday, October 3rd. It is hard to miss their elegant St. Paul's United Church of Christ sitting on its green hill, not so far away in Dahlville, assuming you don't miss Dahlville itself, a tiny bump in the road founded by German immigrant farmers 10 miles northeast of Pena. The Reverend Matthias Galster established the congregation in 1865 as St. Paul's Evangelische Kirche. A German immigrant himself, Galster sported a ZZ Top style white beard that looked like it had been glued on and an astonishing evangelical fertility rate. Dalville was one of more than 16 churches he managed to seed in the 76 years God granted before calling him home. Known as the German Church, or just simply the Church on the Hill, the current building with its 80-foot spire dates to 1887. It's all heart pine carpentry lit by 20-foot-tall windows that showcase a two-story interior with a magnificent pulpit elevating the pastor 12 feet nearer to God than the flock at his feet. "I've never preached from up there yet," said the Reverend Steve Nance, 60, the current St. Paul's pastor who has only been in office 6 months. "I didn't want to go up without a parachute." He will climb the stairway to heaven for the celebrations Saturday, showing up in period costume and promising to arrive either on horseback or by carriage, whichever he can arrange. He'll also climb even higher, heading up to the second floor balcony to ring the steeple bell to officially launch a time of celebration and grateful prayer. There aren't as many to do the celebrating as there once were, however. The church's rows of elegantly sculpted pews offer a divine overabundance of perches for a congregation that now struggles to hit 20 on the Sabbath. Young faces craning up at that sky-high pulpit are also in short supply, but congregation members such as Chet Metzger have absolutely no doubt someone will be around to mark the Dalville congregation's 200th anniversary. "We will be here," says the 58-year-old farmer. "Why? Because we're strong believers and we have faith." Even people who don't belong to the congregation admit to being smitten by the picture-perfect German church on the hill. Renee Potter grew up in Assumption and now lives in Champaign, but was married in the Dalville church after promising herself to either be married here or buried here. She says the elegant building and the congregation's history make it worth caring about. "I just love everything about it, the history, the people. I've always loved this church," she says, "and I just want to support it." Lifelong church member Ed Vincent, a retired farmer, also was wed in the church and says one day the place he prefers above all others to touch base with God will see him out of this world too. "I couldn't imagine ever going anywhere else, and I enjoy the people, the fellowship," he says, "and I've got high hopes this church will always be here." Vincent will certainly always be there, next to his late wife, Olive. His name is already on a tombstone in the church cemetery, but it's engraved with incomplete calendar information that the 73-year-old is happy to take his time finishing. "It's got my first date on it," he says with a laugh, "but not the last one." And from Decatur, an article written by Emily Steele, Herald and Review staff writer, "Senior Mental Unit to Open at DMH." With an eye on future needs, Decatur Memorial Hospital is opening a new unit to help seniors with behavioral and mental health problems. The Senior Behavioral Health Services Department will open Thursday and is tailored to seniors with mental issues that affect their ability to function and are aggravated by underlying health issues and medications. Psychiatrists Chaudhry Kavuri will serve as medical director of a team of a dozen nurses, social workers, therapeutic recreation therapists, and certified nurse assistants. They will provide therapy, medication management, coping skills, conflict resolution, wellness training, and other services to stabilize patients. Mental health disorders affect at least 17% of individuals age 55 and older, and the risk of depression is 4 times greater than that of the general population, Kavuri said. Due to the presence of other medical conditions, depression and other mental disorders often go undiagnosed in older patients. The 13,000-square-foot unit on the 6th floor will have 20 beds and rooms that were built to reduce the risk for self and staff injury. Everything is psych safe, Assistant Director Marty Tolliver said. That section of the hospital previously housed long-term care. Tolliver said the unit is the only one on that floor and will be secured with locked external doors and cameras. Visitors will need a patient code and be let in by a nurse. There's an activity room for recreation therapy and a meeting area for group counseling. Tolliver said it's important for patients there to interact with others. It's about getting them back to their optimal level of functioning, she said. The unit will begin accepting inpatient referrals Thursday from healthcare providers and social workers for those 55 and older who are in danger to themselves or others when living at home or in assisted living. We're going to be taking people who could not be safely managed with an outpatient program, said Keith Gostel, interim director of nursing of the unit. This could apply to those with a spouse who wanders outside the home, those in assisted living who are aggressive or experiencing psychosis. Most would have a mental illness in addition to their psychiatric disorder. Working with geriatrics does require more medical care because when you're older, you're more likely to have a chronic condition, Gostel said. The new unit, focusing on senior mental health, has been in development for about a year and originated with finding out if there was a need. For quite a while now, we've had a focus on our senior population, Chief Nursing Officer Linda Fahey said. Using Diamond Healthcare Corp., DMH found the local population of people 55 and older is expected to increase 6% by 2017. Whenever you look at the aging population here and the potential for diagnosing and serving psychiatric diseases in our area, we are probably under-identifying that need, Fahey said. Still, Gostel said they are taking a cautious approach to operating the unit to make sure they don't expand too quickly. The hospital has had a difficult time finding qualified staff with medical and behavioral skills. Tolliver has been letting area nursing homes, assisted living centers, and senior service agencies know about the new unit. There's been a lot of interest, she said. I've been very pleased with the feedback about the need for this population. From Decatur, by Chris Lisvardi, Herald and Review staff writer, ADM invests $2 million in National Foodworks Services. Juan Luciano sees development of the Midwest Inland Port as an example of how innovation is being embraced in Decatur. Luciano, the president and CEO of Archer Daniels Midland Company, sees further opportunities to change the economic outlook for central Illinois. You can truly feel the momentum building, Luciano said Friday evening during an event at Richland Community College to officially launch a marketing effort for the port. This is a moment to start thinking bigger about the possibilities in central Illinois. To enhance the possibilities for change, Luciano says plans to support business growth in Decatur. He announced the company's $2 million investment in the National Foodworks Services Project being developed in the former Brush College School. The investment will help transform the school into a food incubator with state-of-the-art equipment that fits with ADM's focus on developing products using healthy ingredients, Luciano said. National Foodworks can lead the way in the transformation of central Illinois into a preeminent center for food and beverage innovation in the Midwest, and perhaps the nation, he said. Luciano said ADM will further launch a food and beverage challenge to move entrepreneurial ideas off the drawing board onto the plates of consumers. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner supports the efforts of ADM and other companies in Decatur to enhance development opportunities for the area. It's an exceptional opportunity, said Rauner, who met with members of the Midwest Inland Port Strategic Development Coalition before a presentation to a group of business and community leaders. It's got incredible potential, Rauner said. Rauner said changing the culture in Springfield will benefit pro-business growth efforts. Bad state government policies have not helped, he said. We're going to change that, Rauner said. Today is a key step in that process. We have every reason to thrive in Illinois. And from Springfield by Kurt Erickson, Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief, Bills Coming Due for State Services. With Illinois poised to enter its fourth month without a budget, the drumbeat of a more pervasive government shutdown is getting louder. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration warned last week that vendors are starting to balk at delivering food to state-run nursing homes for veterans. And Secretary of State Jesse White says he's worried the lights might be turned out in the Capitol and other state offices if he can't convince utility companies to hold on much longer without being paid. We are concerned the local utility companies will discontinue providing electricity, gas, and coal, White said in a letter to the Republican governor. In addition, the entity that performs daily garbage pickup and removal has threatened to discontinue this service. Thus far, we have successfully convinced them to hold on a while longer. The prospect of mounds of garbage surrounding one of the state's most historic buildings comes as much of state government continues to operate via court orders and agreements between Rauner and the Democrats who control the legislature. Schools have been promised state funding this year, and a judge has ordered that state workers and some welfare-related services be paid, creating the facade that even one of the most dysfunctional state governments in the nation can continue to operate without an official spending blueprint. The lack of a budget, however, means the entities that keep the wheels of government rolling are not being paid. In East Moline, for example, Representative Mike Smitty, Democrat from Hillsdale, said officials are frustrated that the Illinois Department of Corrections cannot pay for water and sewer service to the minimum security prison there. That can get up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, and that puts a real strain on city finances, Smitty said. State Rep. John Bradley, Democrat of Marion, said the level of fear about the lack of a budget continues to build. I hear panic from people all the time about what's going on and them fearing what's going to happen to them. There is a lot of terror in terms of what's happening and what's going to happen in the future, Bradley said. White said the prospect of a shutdown is beginning to rear its head. Software vendors, he said in his letter, are threatening to discontinue their licensing agreements. They could lead to a state system-wide shutdown and could make us vulnerable to data breaches, considering that our firewall system blocks millions of illicit attempts each week to get into our network and breach our data. Personal information of nearly every Illinoisan could be jeopardized, which cannot be allowed to happen, White wrote. Some landlords who lease space for the 138 driver's license offices are pursuing notices of default, White said. The armored truck service that moves cash from the facilities is threatening to cancel its contract, potentially endangering hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash collected at the facilities, he added. In order to keep various services afloat while he awaits the gridlock to break, White said his office will soon discontinue mailing vehicle registration renewal notices to customers. The question that no one can or is answering is when the stalemate will come to an end. The Senate returns to action October 5th, but the House is not scheduled to be back in session until October 20th, and there have been no meetings between Rauner and the legislative leaders since May. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, September 28th, 2015. Please stay tuned.